Finney-Smith to inbound. Back to Doncic. Doncic pulls up, three-pointer. Bang! Bang! It's good! Doncic wins the game at the buzzer!
Luka Doncic, a 21-year-old. Come on, folks, jump on the bandwagon for Luka Doncic. Luka is the face of the NBA. Well, he's one of the faces, no doubt. And now all of a sudden the talking heads want to talk about, is he the best player in the league now? I believe somebody else has been talking about that for a while, about how great he is. I know others have. I know we have. And it goes all the way back to when he was drafted. Luka Doncic was drafted. I remember the draft, and we talked about that draft. And I remember we said, Luka's the best player in the draft. And I couldn't understand why the Mavericks or the Hawks, you know, they drafted Luka and they traded him in Dallas for Trae Young. And it's like, dude, right then and there.
We were all like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Like, Trae Young's great and all. He can score. But Luka is a one-of-a-kind talent. But people didn't know enough about him overseas. And all it took for me was Fran Franchella saying he is the next great thing. And Fran Franchella sees a ton of international basketball. He's seen guys that play well over there that struggle over here. He felt he was the real deal. And you look back at that 2018 draft, which is only a few years ago, DeAndre Ayton was taken number one. The Suns hired Luka Doncic's coach from Slovenia as a coach, and everybody thought, oh, they'll take Doncic. They didn't. They should have. They didn't. They took DeAndre Ayton. And then the really bad one, the Kings took Marvin Bagley, who, by the way, was a really good college player, but that doesn't mean you're a great pro. And then the Hawks drafted Luka, and the Mavericks drafted Trae Young, and they traded him. And in sandwich in between was Jaren Jackson Jr., who's a pretty decent player for the Grizzlies, at number four. So the Suns and the Kings passed on Luka. And the Hawks had Luka and traded him for Trae Young.
Yes.
And then when Porzingis came over, I said before the season, I said the sleeper in the NBA this year, before COVID hit and everything, is Porzingis and Doncic. They could be a great 1-2 tandem for the next 10 years. Now, the key is, can they stay healthy? Luka's had ankle injuries here and there, missed some time. Porzingis sat out yesterday with a sore knee. He ripped up his knee with the Knicks. He was an amazing talent with the Knicks. He's still young, by the way. Porzingis is. He can play in. He can play out.
Yep.
It's just welcome to the Luka bandwagon. People don't realize Luka Doncic is 6'7", 230. He's solid. He's not 6'7", 180. He's 6'7", 230. And he's only 21. And yesterday, what he did against the best team in the NBA, the Clippers, although when Paul George isn't playing great and George has been completely missing the last three games of the series, and he's catching a lot of heat, and rightfully so, because he just hasn't performed. Luka Doncic, at the age of 21 yesterday, on a bum left ankle, they didn't know if he was going to play or not. 43 points, 17 rebounds, 13 assists, and the game-winning three you just heard at the end, and it changes the whole series. If he misses that shot, Mavericks are down 3-1. Clippers will probably finish it in five, maybe six. Now it's 2-2, and how did the Clippers bounce back? Kawhi had a huge game. Lou Williams had 36 off the bench, and the Clippers still lost. Clippers had a 21-point lead in the first half, still lost. So I look really smart with the Luka thing. I'm not going to look smart at the Clippers losing first round, because that's how I picked to win the whole thing. And I still think the Clippers will probably find a way to win this series. But I think when we made our series predictions, we picked the Clippers in six or seven. We figured it'd be a longer series. I don't think any of us had it in a sweep or in five. But this is what's scary about Luka Doncic. He's 21. He's 21. Like, if you missed that, everybody would be like, yeah, you know, I had a great game, but, you know, he's got to go through these growing pains in order to be the next face of the NBA. And now the question people have been saying, and they've been saying it for a while, and I've been saying he's going to be the face of the NBA for quite some time if he stays healthy. I said it, I think, last week that Greek the Freak better enjoy his MVP trophy this year, because he's probably not going to win another one for a while because Luka's going to win it. Of course, you know how that works. The NBA gets into this political thing where you know, LeBron should have won it probably 8 years in a row. Jordan should have won every year he played, for crying out loud. And they got to give it to other people like Karl Malone. And then Jordan beats Karl Malone and the Jazz in the NBA Finals. And, you know, LeBron's like, oh, okay, fine, not the MVP. Well, we'll just go to the NBA Finals every year. But, you know, it was asked a week ago. I think we talked about on the show, who would you take, Greek the Freak or Luka Doncic? I said, I'll take Luka Doncic. First of all, he's a little bit younger. Second of all, he's only going to get better. And he's a guy that can play. He can post up. He's a great passer. And Giannis is a good passer. He's not a great passer. Doncic, now, Giannis is a better defender. And so if you're talking about the best player in the NBA, I always still go with the most complete player in the NBA. And for me, LeBron James, Kawhi Leonard, those to me are the top two players in the NBA because they do everything. And they both can hurt you from the outside. The Greek the Freak is a little bit limited in regards to his range. He shoots about 30% from three. Now he's gotten better, and I think he's doing a better job of trusting his teammates and passing the ball, and he's still an amazing talent, don't get me wrong. And if I had him on my team, I wouldn't kick him off. But I think the two best all-around players in the NBA are Kawhi Leonard and LeBron James. But Luka Doncic's, if he improves his defense, which he is getting better defensively, and he's only 21, he's already, I think you almost have to say right now, he's one of the top five players in the NBA.
Oh, right now, for sure.
Because you got LeBron, Kawhi, Giannis, and I think you probably could put Harden. I mean, you probably got to say Harden and Doncic. Do you got anybody? I mean, Damian Lillard's looking great now. But
yeah, right now, Lillard, I would put Lillard ahead of Harden as far as right now. But, you know, as far as what they've done, probably not.
I don't know, man. I've been critical of Harden, but Harden in the bubble has been really good defensively. He has been complete, and he still scores 35 with ease against these players and teams that are really good. I got to give Harden the beard some mad respect. I think everybody's on, and I love Damian Lillard, don't get me wrong. He's amazing too. They're both a little bit, you know, at times don't play great defense, but you know, I don't know, that's tough. Okay, you could say those are the top six, then somebody else will say, well, what about Jason Tatum? How about Donovan Mitchell? 250-point games in this series? I mean, he's a guy that people have been overlooking for a long time in regards to the national media because he's in Utah. And he's an amazing talent. Jamal Murray put up 50 in a loss for the Nuggets yesterday. He is really underrated.
Definitely coming up for sure.
You know, Jokic is a really good player. There's some unbelievable young players in the NBA. But the question, I guess, that people are asking today, is Luka already the best player in the league? Now, I love myself some Luka. Dusty knows I've got like a man crush on this dude. I was going to go, and this is not this year. This was last year. When I watched him play for a couple of weeks in NBA, after about a month, I said, dude, this guy's legit. This guy is flat out. Oh, my goodness. Imagine what he's going to do in his fifth, sixth year. Look what he's doing already at the age of 21. I was going to buy tickets to take my oldest son to see the Thunder, not because I wanted to see the Thunder play, but I wanted to see Luka Doncic play in person when the Mavs are in town. Well, we were waiting, and the NBA, you know you better wait because sometimes guys don't play back-to-back nights, or especially older stars like LeBron. And then we waited a little bit, and we thought, well, maybe we'll wait a little bit until towards the end, maybe prices of tickets go down just a hair. And then we knew Luka had an ankle that had been bothering him a little bit. So we waited, and then guess what? Luka ended up not playing that game against the Thunder, so we didn't waste the money to go watch the Thunder and Mavericks without Luka, and he did not play. But I'm going to tell you something. And I told my son last night, because I didn't get to see Jordan in person. I've never seen LeBron in person either. But Luka Doncic, I want to go see him before the prices go sky high when people are going to be like, oh, we got to go see Luka. And it might be already
too late.
It's
probably too late.
Might
now.
Be. Well, I would have earlier.
Exactly.
It wouldn't hurt. So I told my son, I said, you know what? I think if we get to back to somewhat normal and Luka Doncic comes to Oklahoma City again, or maybe drive all the way to Dallas, I will spend the money to go see Luka play once in person, especially early on. He is so good, and he picks you apart in the pick and roll. Absolutely so patient. He plays like he's a 10-year veteran. Luka Doncic is the real deal. Is he, and you know I love myself some Luka, and some Kraken. Luka Kraken would be the greatest sports hero of all time. Luka Kraken. The Seattle Kraken, new hockey team. I like the Kraken logo. People listen to all that. Release the Kraken. But Luka, I love myself some Luka, but can I objectively say he's already the best player in the league? I tell you what, it's getting harder to argue against it. I still say the most complete players in the league are the two I gave you. I think he's right there with Greek the Freak. I don't think Greek the Freak's better than Luka overall. I can't really say that. I mean, Luka comes up big in these playoff games. We've seen Greek the Freak haven't done it the first couple of years. He's got a better team around him, more talent in Milwaukee than Dallas does. Yesterday, he had Porzingis out. And the Clippers know he's going to get the ball. And he still scores 43 on him. And 17 rebounds and 13 assists. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
That's not a triple-double. That's a gigantic triple-double in a game that the Mavs had to have to probably keep their season alive. And he's 21. Did I mention that? He's 21 years old. Let's see. What was I doing when I was 21? I wasn't doing that.
No.
I'm happy if I scored a couple buckets in intramurals. He's a freak. We talk about Greek the freak. Luka's a freak in a good way. So I'll ask Dusty, because I think it's getting tougher and tougher to argue he isn't the best player in the league. I'm not saying he is, but I'm saying he's right there. And I think in a few years, he definitely is going to be the best player in the league. Or maybe at the end of these playoffs, if the Mavericks end up winning the whole thing, he's going to be the best player in the league. Everybody's going to anoint him that, and probably rightfully so, because he can do so many things to hurt you. He's a great passer. He can rebound. Defensively, he's all right. He's not bad defensively. Not horrible. He's solid. Can he be better? Yeah. He shot a couple air balls from three. That didn't seem to bother him. Superstars don't get bothered by failure, and he doesn't. And he seems to be pretty, you know, he whines the officials a little bit more than I'd like. But I think European players tend to do that. See Vlade Divac and all those guys that used to come over and flop and whine. But I won't really hold that against Luka because I see LeBron whine too. So, yeah, to say the least. So, and James Harden whine. Is Luka already the best player in the NBA?
I'm going to reserve it and see if they win the whole thing. Kind of what you're just talking about, though.
Stephen A. Smith and jump on the wagon after the fight.
No, but kind of what you're just talking about, though. I think people will say that if they would even go maybe to the finals or something like that.
If you knock off the Clippers and the Lakers.
I mean, if he can get through the Western Conference and keep doing what he's doing right now, I would say yes. One of my buddies that I went to college with, he actually ended up playing like 10 years basketball overseas, who was an all-star in Japan. And one of the things that I liked that he posted one time on Facebook is, like, I hate the term two-way player in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
You're a basketball player.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be a two-way player. You're a basketball player. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's where I give the edge to LeBron and Kawhi,
mm-hmm.
is that they're basketball players. Mm-hmm. Full-time, full-on, everything mm-hmm. that you do on the basketball court, they can do.
Yeah.
Kawhi's probably not as efficient of a passer as either one of those.
Although he's pretty good.
He's good. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying they're so good
about
distributing the basketball.
He made the great pass for the three that gave him the lead before Doncic's game.
Yeah, and I'm not taking. I'm not trying to take it because I watched the guy for however many years on my team. I'm not trying to take away.
He's
just not. I don't think he probably has the vision that they do, 100%. But I'm gonna tell you right now. Obviously, he plays better defense than either of them. I think.
Yeah, I agree.
LeBron is pretty good at help, recovery, defense, those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But you're gonna lock down one on one guy. Kawhi's the guy out of those three that we're talking about.
Agree.
Without a question. And so...
Which brings you to the question, why isn't he guarding Doncic all the time then? He wasn't.
Yeah, and I don't know.
And when he didn't do very well against Doncic.
Yeah, and of course I say that, and I'm thinking of Kawhi that I know too.
Yeah, right.
From when he was playing with the Spurs. And, you know, he's a different guy now too, because I think a lot of the things they want to do is keep him healthy and not put him in dangerous and tough positions too. And I don't think he's probably quite as good as he was when he was younger as a defender either. And I think part of that might be because of the focus that he did put on getting so much better offensively and kind of perfecting that part of his craft. But as far as overall, I still feel like LeBron's at the top, and I just – that's what I feel like right now still.
Yeah.
But Luke is right there. I mean – it's hard to argue what
really
he's doing,
is.
But I don't feel like he's quite the best right now.
But he's in the discussion at the age of 21 against guys that are in their prime, and he's not even in his prime yet. That's the scary part. No player in NBA playoff history has put up the stats that Doncic did yesterday. And remember, it wasn't against the Joe Blow or the Janes of the world. It was against, no offense to Janes or Joes in the world, but he did it against the Clippers. And no Porzingis. He put up stats that no player in NBA playoff history has done other than this. He had 40 points, 15 rebounds, 10 assists. He actually had 43 points, 17 rebounds, 13 assists. Only Oscar Robertson and Charles Barkley have ever done that in a playoff game. So he's one of three people to do that. Doncic joined an illustrious list of players to score 40 or more in a playoff game while also hitting a buzzer beater. The others, their names are Damian Lillard, Kawhi Leonard, LeBron James, and Michael Jordan. And now Luka Doncic. That's a pretty good club. Jordan, LeBron, Kawhi. We just said LeBron and Kawhi are probably the two best players in the league. Complete. Jordan, supposedly the greatest of all time. And Lillard, who's pretty doggone good. And now Luka. And he's 21.
Yeah.
21. In this series against the Clippers, who are really supposedly good defensively. He's averaging 32 points, 11 rebounds, just under 10 assists. So he's almost averaging a triple-double. And remember, he missed a quarter and a half in game 3 and still had a triple-double. He's shooting 52% from the field, 38% on threes. And remember, he played less than 30 minutes in game two due to a blowout. Game three, due to an ankle injury. And yesterday, he played 41 minutes after it. They didn't even know if he was going to be able to go after he really badly turned his ankle and only had about a day and some change to get ready. He had one day off in between games. And it's one thing to do what he did and come out and play. It's another to do what he did like that. Let's hear from the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks about Luka Doncic. And coming up, the head coach of the Bullet Trojans, Brad Gober.
This would have to rank pretty high up there. You know, look, we know this kid has got a flair for the dramatic. You know, he's a performer as well as a great player. You know, he's a guy that lives for these moments and is completely fearless. And so, look, at the end, it was all about finding a way to get the ball in his hands. And you know, the last shot was obviously a tremendous shot. But his effort the entire game, it was just, you know, it's just one of those things from top to bottom. It's a 40-point triple-double, you know, with, what, 17 rebounds or something like that. Just a phenomenal effort. And, you know, in his mind, I mean, you know, he came back into the last game after being injured. And so, you know, he's got such great heart that if he was able to feel, you know, anything close to decent, you know, I really felt he would probably play today. I wasn't going to say that publicly, but that's what this kid's about. He's such a smart player. You know, he sees things ahead before other people see him, and that's one of the reasons, you know, that he is so special. You know, not only his skill set, his strength, size, all that stuff, but the way he computes the game. And you know, he sees the game in, you know, 6G. It's not 5G. It's 6G. It's another level beyond what most people see it. So, you know, just a very, very special player. And this game today was, you know, was from another planet.
Was from another planet. Now, let me quantify that comment. Rick Carlisle used to play for the Boston Celtics. He played on the Celtics team, some of the best of all time. He played with Larry Bird. He played with Kevin McHale. He played with some of the best. For him to say that was from another planet, and that's a 21-year-old he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, do you know who's also a Dallas Mavericks fan? Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes and Luka Doncic are going to be together on the front covers of magazines because they are the faces of their leagues and could be the faces of their leagues for a decade or more. Mahomes is the face of the National Football League at 24. He's on top of the world. He's won a Super Bowl already. He's MVP of the regular season, Super Bowl MVP. We know that. And he's only 24. Luka Doncic is 21. Imagine if the Mavericks knock off the Clippers. I know we might be dreaming here a little bit, but hey, it's 2-2. They have no answers with Doncic right now, and Porzingis didn't even play. So if the Mavericks get by the Clippers, then they'll play probably the Jazz. Who says they can't beat the Jazz? Then they would probably get the Lakers. Now, I don't think the Mavericks are going to go to the NBA Finals, but if there's ever a year for a team to surprise, it would be the bubble because there's no home court.
Yeah.
And so maybe the Mavericks, or maybe it's the Jazz that's that team. Because the Jazz are really good right now.
Yeah, they're better than I thought they were going to be.
And in fairness, when we pat ourselves on the back, talking about how we knew Luka was going to be really, really good, we also said the Nuggets were our sleeper for the NBA playoffs, and the Nuggets are now 3-1 to the Jazz.
Yes.
So we don't, you know, we don't get everything right. I just, full disclosure there.
Yes, not at all.
No. But wrapping up the NBA yesterday, the Mavericks beat the Clippers in overtime, 135-133 behind Doncic. He was phenomenal, the game-winning three from about 26, 27 feet. So that series tied 2-2. The Raptors scored 150 yesterday. Have you noticed in the bubble there's less defense, a lot more points?
Yeah.
Which I kind of like. Raptors win 150-122. They sweep the Nets. The Celtics swept the Sixers 110-106. Boy, they really missed Ben Simmons in that series.
Mm-hmm.
One of the top defensive players in the league, and they could have used him as Jason Tatum at 28 points, 15 rebounds. Kemba Walker, 32. Celtics move on. They'll take on the Raptors in the Eastern Conference semifinals. The Nuggets finally didn't get blown out. They got rolled in games 2 and 3 against the Jazz. And Donovan Mitchell had 51. He's one of only 3 NBA players in the history of the league to score more than 50 twice in a series. Jordan and Wilt are the other two. Mm-hmm. That's pretty decent company. And Jamal Murray had 50 in a losing effort. He did everything he could. It was a tight game, close all the way, but the Jazz win 129-127. They're up 3-1. So you could have a Jazz-Maverick Western Conference semifinal, 7-6. We could. I mean, there's a long way to go. I mean, Nuggets aren't completely dead, although I'm writing them off. And the Mavericks, that could be go either way. Game 5, so big. And then today, NBA playoffs, we got 4 more games. I love it. 12:30 today, the Bucks and the Magic. I told my son after the Bucks lost game 1 that the Bucks will win the next 4. That's what I told my son. I said that was a wake-up
pretty good
call.
Feeling about that.
Because Orlando's not that great. I think the Milwaukee just sleptwalked through game 1. They've looked pretty good the last 2 games. Mm-hmm. So the Bucks and the Magic, game 4. The Rockets and the Thunder, that's game 4 at 3 o'clock today on TNT. The Thunder are down 2-1. They got a win in overtime to keep themselves alive in game 3. And the Heat have a chance to finish out the Pacers. They're up 3-0. I thought that series would go 7. Pacers without a couple of players, though. And then the Lakers and the Blazers, they're up 2-1, the Lakers. I told my son this. After the Blazers won game 1, I said the Lakers still going to win the series. And my son said the Lakers are going to win the series. They're going to win it in 5. I said, you're telling me the Lakers are going to win the next 4? And he's like, yeah. So I told him the Bucks aren't going to lose another one after losing game 1. He's telling me the Lakers aren't going to lose another one after game 1, even though he's cheering for the Blazers. And he and I both might be right on that. The number 1 seeds. This is why after game 1, when they both lost, the talking heads, and all I had to do was see about 30 seconds, I knew what it was all about. I could see the caption at the bottom of the TV screen, FS1 or ESPN or whatever. Which team's in bigger trouble, the Lakers or the Bucks? The answer is neither, because it was one game. There's no need to even talk about freaking out with one game.
No.
If you're down 0-2, now listen, if the Bucks or Lakers go down 0-2, now I think it's a fair thing to debate and question. But you're just looking for filler material when it's 1-0. One game doesn't make a series at all. You're down 0-2, it's not the end of the world either. And if you're down 3-1, as we talked about with the Cavs and the Warriors 2 years ago, when you got the greatest player in the league playing for your team down 3-1, don't let it go to a game 7. The Warriors let it get to a game 7, and they lost because the best player in the world made the best play of the game, the unbelievable block against Iguodala. And, of course, Irving made the huge 3. So the great teams with the great players are going to elevate their games. And the playoffs are a whole different animal, a whole different animal. Even in the bubble, it's a whole different animal. The intensity, the focus, the rotations shorten at times, or some guys don't play like they would during the regular season, the seeding games. And right now, the Blazers is going the way I thought it would in regards to the Lakers have the size inside. AD's picked it up. LeBron, of course, had a big game with 38 the other night and almost had a triple-double. And now they're starting to make some threes. And if the Lakers make a few threes, they're going to be tough to beat because they got AD inside. They got LeBron, who can be their closer, and AD can be a closer too. And so the Lakers are fine. I don't think the Blazers are going to win another game in the series either. But if they're going to, they better get it tonight because then they could tie the series. If they go down 3-1, I think that series is over.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was never worried about the Bucks even a little bit.
No.
Like, there was no question in my mind about that. Orlando's hot. Hey, we'll play this first playoff game in Orlando.
Yeah, true.
And let's win this game here in our area. And I know it's not their home court or anything like that, but it's like we're here in Orlando too. People are forgetting about us, and this thing is in Orlando. Let's make a statement. They went out, they won game 1 and ticked them off.
They did. You saw the fire intensity the Bucks had in game 2?
It's not been good.
No, it's been a one-sided series.
But like on the other side, on the flip of that, obviously I think the Lakers have a much bigger challenge than the Bucks do by getting down 0-1, but I don't, like we talked about before, I think that the trendy pick was the Blazers because of how well they played and how well Damian Lillard played down the stretch of the, the run to actually get them into the playoffs.
Right.
So I think that was, everybody was a little clouded by that, and, we're seeing We saw the reason for that in game one, I guess. But when you look at it, we also see the reason why we said what we did, where it's just too trendy for everybody, and they're not paying attention to this is actually the playoffs starting.
Mm-hmm. Let's keep in mind Carmelo's plays for the Blazers.
Anything exactly.
Carmelo's on doesn't go very far. Yeah. So I know that's a cheap shot. Carmelo the other day played bad in the first half, then got hot, hit six straight shots. But I still watch Carmelo, and he has changed his game a little bit to where, I mean, he's playing a little bit more defense, which that's nice to see. He's hustling a little bit more. Sometimes he takes plays off, so that's nice to see. But he still has the old Carmelo in him, and where he gets the ball, he doesn't pass it, and he chucks a 17-footer and bricks it. And I saw that plenty in the game the other day. And then when he got going, I thought Jeff Van Gundy, who I think is the best analyst in the business when it comes to NBA. I think he's so good because he's blunt. He says what he sees. He doesn't worry about, ooh, we're the rights holders of the NBA. He's not afraid to ruffle feathers. I love that about Jeff Van Gundy. I like that about Barkley, too. I don't agree with everything they say, but I respect how candid they are. And Jeff Van Gundy, the other day when he was talking about the teams and the players and everything else, he's criticizing, first of all, in the Laker-Blazer game, he was talking about this very interesting point. He said, you know, Damon Lillard had a bad fourth quarter the other night in game three. And Jeff Van Gundy goes, you know, I think they played through Carmelo in the third quarter because Carmelo got hot. Well, when you play through Carmelo, it basically is you stand around and watch. And he said, I think Lillard got out of a rhythm. He goes, I'm not saying they shouldn't have gone through Carmelo. He was hot. But Lillard got out of a rhythm. I think he's dead right. I think he's completely right. I think that's a great point. He took the ball out of his hands, and so then he got out of a rhythm, and then he struggled in the fourth quarter. I think that's a good point. And the other thing he said the other day, I don't know if you saw this. This was a playoff game. It was game three. It was the Lakers and the Blazers. And there was a turnover or a steal. LeBron James and Anthony Davis, along with one Blazer, didn't even cross half court. And it was like a 3-on-2, and 10 seconds went off shot clock, and none of those guys got past half court. It was embarrassing. And Jeff Van Gundy said it right off the bat. I love it. He jumped all over it. He goes, that is embarrassing. He goes, that is ridiculous. This is a playoff game, and that's how you're going to run down the floor? He goes, that is embarrassing. And Mark Jackson, you know, rode his coattails and said, yeah, you're right, coach, da-da-da-da. Mike Breen, of course, didn't say anything, which is fine because he's a play-by-play guy. Let the color guys go nuts. And I thought, wow, that was good stuff. You know, we're ripping LeBron and Anthony Davis, the two highest-paid players, two of the best players in the league. And he was absolutely dead right about it. It was like a pickup game when where you're too tired, you don't get back, so you stand in half court, wait for a miss, and then holler for the ball so you can get a cherry pick and layup.
Yeah.
That's what it was. And this was a game three of an NBA playoff series.
That's well, I saw LeBron do that in game one on one situation. Like
I don't remember Jordan ever doing that.
No. And he was over on his end of the floor, and I think either he missed or somebody missed, or it was because it was like a break, and Portland got the rebound, and I think they went down and scored, like, really easy. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, he just stayed back and didn't even contest anything.
Just conserving his energy, I guess.
The Lakers called the timeout, and he went across half court to the bench. And it was like, I don't know about that. Like, those things don't look good. Like, I understand you probably realized you weren't going to be able to stop this play from happening, this fast break after the miss, that Portland was out on a break that was probably maybe unstoppable.
Right.
But it's like, I don't know about that. At least make an effort. Make it look like you're trying.
Yeah, there's the key.
You know, at least get across half court, like jog or something. Like, you don't have to sprint to the guy that's way past you already, but...
Well,
stand down there by yourself.
We know LeBron can hustle down the floor because look at that block I referred to with Iguodala. I mean, where he hustled his butt all the way down. And I think he does conserve energy at times. He does play quite a few minutes at his age. But I don't remember seeing Bird and Magic and Jordan do that. Now, that doesn't mean that LeBron can't. It doesn't mean that LeBron's a worse player. I'm not saying don't get stuck in this whole GOAT argument because it's just a waste of time. I'm just saying that those players I remember watching growing up, the stars, didn't take these plays off. Maybe they did, and I missed it, but I don't remember that. Whereas I've seen LeBron do that a lot. At the same time, I do know that LeBron has a ton on his plate, and there's been teams he's been on that he hasn't had, Robin to his Batman. Although, of course, he went and joined the team to have that, which in Miami won a few championships because of it. And then he had Love and Irving and Cleveland, and now he's got AD. But we saw what happened last year. Of course, he got hurt where they struggled because he didn't have anybody to help him. But we've seen him with teams that should have never been even going to the finals, but luckily he was in Eastern Conference. And, that wear and tear adds up, I think, eventually on a guy's body. And his workout regimen is insane. he works out right after the games, which some players do that. But LeBron's in great physical condition for the age of 35 and the amount of mileage on his tires. So I'm not going to go nuts about how LeBron is being lazy and not hustling back. But I'm with you. I think that, for me, the key is what you just said. At least make it look like you are. Like, it's just so insulting when you don't even, like, you just don't even, for 10, I mean, there was 10 seconds off the shot clock. It was down to 14, and LeBron, and then, I don't know what AD's excuse is, but LeBron, both those guys didn't even get across half court. It's like, what?
Yeah, and I think it all ties into the whole, you know, where the NBA is right now with
load management
and all that stuff. And it's like, hey, if this is out of my reach and, yeah, I got to save this energy and this effort for later in the game.
Yeah, which maybe that
ends
up
working. And I think that's part of it. I honestly
do. It worked for Kawhi last year.
But again, it's a different mentality in today's NBA. There's no question about that. Yeah. They play the game different. They do things different. They don't focus as much on, you know, I'm going to go one-on-one, you're not doing anything against me type of mentality. Like Jordan had. Like I'm just using that as an example.
Sure.
But Larry Bird had that. Those guys all had that. It was something different that they played different with back then. It's not, I'm not putting down LeBron James.
Right.
They all do it. Mm-hmm. I don't think that LeBron and AD are, you know, any different than a lot of people that are playing in the league right now. They just are higher on the pedestal, so you point them out a little quicker. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just the way the NBA is right now. You get load management. You get guys that want to rest. You get guys that say, hey, I need to take time off right now. I'm not going to put max effort into this because they're going to go make a layup anyway. Mm-hmm. It's going to waste my energy for later in the game.
I don't, you know, Kobe's birthday would have been yesterday, Kobe Bryant. It would have been his 42nd. I don't remember Kobe not crossing half court 10 seconds into a shot and on the other end.
No.
And I don't remember Jordan or any of those other guys, but Kobe would be at least closer to this generation, time-wise, because he's
he's right in the middle of it there. Kobe had the old school drive.
Mamba
mentality, there you go.
Mamba mentality, no doubt about it. You see the Nike?
I did.
That was awesome. Yeah. That gave me goosebumps. The Kobe, Nike, that wasn't all about Kobe. It was just basically be better. Even though it was Kobe, it had a lot more into it for a minute and a half. Whoever puts together that stuff for Nike, fantastic job. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. All right, we'll talk Royals baseball coming up. Also, a star safety cut loose from his NFL team. It's a guy that could have been on the Chiefs team. The Chiefs maybe dodged a bullet there. NFL dealing with some COVID-19 testing issues, NHL playoffs, and a golfer that had quite the weekend. But right now, we're joined by the head coach, Brad Gober, of the Bullitt Trojan football team, as they had a scrimmage on Saturday. I had a chance to catch up with the coach.
Wade Gershon here with the head coach of the Bullitt Trojan football team, Brad Gober, as they just completed their first scrimmage of the season. Coach, how'd that scrimmage go for you guys?
Oh, you know, it was about what we expected. You know, there were some good moments and some moments that weren't very good, you know. That's kind of what you expect when you go to your first, live situation. You know, but our kids competed, and our kids obviously were able to see some live looks. You know, we don't tackle full live very often in practice, and so it was good for our kids to kind of get that. And so I like where we're at right now, but, you know, obviously we're not ready for a game just yet, and that's what these next 2 weeks are for.
What were you, if anything in particular, that you were wanting to see today that you saw, and then some things you're like, oh, man, we got a ways to go there?
Yeah, I just wanted to see some of our backs and our quarterback, kind of see what they're able to do. Obviously, we have a brand-new backfield with quarterbacks and running backs, and so, you know, I wanted to see how Anthony Hanke did in life situation. He moved in from St. John's Tipton this last January. He did a good job today. We wanted to see some of our young guys up front, you know, in the offensive line, replacing Creighton Johnson, obviously, and Tanner Doherty and Trace McQueen. Those were big losses. But, you know, our young guys did a good job today, and they're getting better every single week.
Now, for everybody that's listening out there, how many kids do you have out for football, and how's the breakdown by class go?
We have, like, 43 out right now. We have about 16 freshmen. And then it's just I don't remember the exact numbers for the upper class. And so we have 16 freshmen, and the rest are our older kids, 10 through 12.
Now, I know that's been a problem, of course, over probably the last 10 years, is that the upperclassmen, there's a smaller amount of them, and there have been some years where there's maybe just a couple of seniors, and so you want those seniors to be leaders, but at the same time, if you don't have a lot of seniors, you need, of course, the next class, juniors, or maybe, who knows, maybe there's a sophomore to step up and be a leader. How does that work for you guys dynamic-wise from a leadership standpoint?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're lucky enough that we're pretty balanced in our classes. You know, I think it's, off the top of my head, I think it's like seven seniors, and then we have like 9 or 10 juniors, and then 9, 10, 11 sophomores, and then obviously the big freshman class. So, you know, the leadership aspect, you know, we worked on that a lot this summer. That was kind of our goal this summer through our character education program within our program, and developing leaders and developing core values. And, you know, with our kids leading, you know, we've had a lot of kids step up and lead. We had kids apply to be captains and had to, you know, read an essay to the team, and then our team voted on those kids. And, you know, we've got a lot of leaders, and I'm excited to be, you know, coaching these kids, and day by day, every day, get to be with them, and, you know, that's all we can ask for.
You mentioned replacing your whole backfield, and, of course, a lot of people focus on the quarterback position, and sometimes quarterbacks get too much credit, sometimes quarterbacks get too much blame, and you certainly lost a talented one last year, and Hudson Gray graduated, but you have others that are ready to step in.
Yeah, Owen's done a great job this summer, and he's gotten better every single week. He had the receivers throwing routes with him a lot this summer. I think it was almost once a week. They'd meet on their own and throw routes, and he's a really good understanding of what we're doing. And, you know, he's able to call out blitzes that are coming and talk the offensive line. And he's very, very poised. And he throws a really good ball. So, you know, we're excited to see, you know, what he does on a Friday night. He had some good moments today. Threw some good deep balls. And he's another lefty like Hudson was, which is unique to have so many lefties come through the program. But now he's done a really good job. And he's one of our captains. And he's just been a great kid for us.
How's the receiving corps look like for you guys this year?
Yeah, I mean, we had a lot of skills. I mean, we talk about as a coaching staff, you know, we have like 12 or 13 offensive linemen right now, and then a ton of skill players. So we have a lot of depth there. So we have a lot of kids battling and competing every single day for time. But you know, there's quite a few kids, you know, that are older, that are stepping up and younger, you know, and I'm excited to see what they're able to do. And some of them made plays today. You know, Max Waters had a catch. He's a freshman. He's a big freshman, like 6'2", 200-pound freshman, receiver, tight end. You know, Brent Walker obviously returns this year from last year as a tight end. And some other guys that were in the program as the years have gone. But Tristan made a great catch today, who was a senior who didn't play last year. I mean, Kalen had a great catch. I mean, and then we had a lot of other kids at skill who were blocking really well. And so it's going to be interesting to see how our skills work out. Logan Arrowsmith, you know, gives us some speed that we haven't had in the past. He's our fastest kid on the team, I think, at 4.8 40. And so there's just a lot of kids vying for spots, and it gives us a lot of depth. And so it allows us to play a lot of kids, and everybody brings, you know, a unique trait to the table.
And then the defense, we focus on the offense there for a moment, but defensively, how do you think things are going to shape up for your team this year?
Yeah, you know, we returned three defensive linemen that played last year significant minutes, from Walker to Conkle and Grady. And so, and then we return, you know, Burks at inside linebacker. So we've got a little core in there. We have to replace a lot of kids that on the secondary and in our other linebacker positions. But, you know, Anthony Hankey's done a good job. So is Hunter Prohaska playing some outside backer and D-line for us. And then Branson Heiser playing linebacker has improved every single week. We're going to be big. I mean, this is the biggest team we've had since I've been here. I mean, we're going to be about, you know, our two inside backers are 205 pounds and heavier, and our outside backers are both 185. So, you know, we got some good size and good ability. So I think our defense is going to be, you know, in a good spot. You know, we have to pursue better than we did today, but, you know, that comes with time.
All right, this is a unique season, and we're certainly all crossing our fingers and hoping that we'll have a season or get to play the whole season. The odds are there may be disruptions. We've seen that with some schools already before the season's even started in different parts of the state. What's the message that you give to the team in regards to that? Because they're clearly aware of what's going on. And then two, how have you dealt with trying to keep people apart or with masks or locker rooms? How different is it for you as coaches to try to maintain what's happening in society today in order to keep the kids safe?
Yeah, I mean, we just talk to our kids that we can control, you know. I say this a lot at practice, but the have to versus get to, right? And so I start off with, you know, you don't have to be here. You get to be here, you know, because every single day that we're here is a blessing, you know. And, you know, our kids have bought into the what we want to do as far as to do everything we can to try and make sure of a season, from masks to social distancing at practice. I mean, there's just so many things that our kids are doing because they want to play, you know, and they know how important, you know, athletics and just in general activities, extracurricular activities are for the whole, you know, education of the student. And so, you know, they want to be here. They've been excited this entire time. And then as far as, like, you know, for us, you know, we just, you know, stagger our locker rooms, you know, and so the freshman or JV will dress out first while the varsity watches film in the weight room. And then the freshman will go outside to start practice, and the varsity changes to keep people out of the locker room. There is no hanging out in there. In years past, you know, in most years, I mean, kids like to hang out in the locker room and talk, and then there's so many memories that come from those situations. We just can't do that this year. And so from that to, you know, cleaning the locker room every single night, you know, disinfecting, cleaning their pads. It's just a lot of stuff that we have to do that, you know, in years past we didn't do as often. But, you know, we as a staff and a school and a community are willing to do whatever it takes to ensure that our kids get to have the experiences of playing on a Friday night and a Monday night.
Coach, thanks for the time, and we will be talking to you very soon down the road.
All right, thank you very much.
As boy head football coach Brad Gober, Beloit now is 2A in football this year. Keep that in mind, and it's probably a good year for Beloit to go 2A, although they do have some experience back there, some core players to build around. On the defensive side of the ball, they do have quite a bit of inexperience on the offensive side of the skill positions, but they got some kids that have stepped up as leaders, as you heard him say, and they've got some young talent on the way, too. So we will see how it all plays out. Their first game is scheduled to be September 4th on the road at Republic County, which we'll have on the radio on Z96.3 Lake, and also a live video stream at ncksports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. And we'll preview and talk to other coaches from around the area coming up this week, and I'm sure in the next week as well, here on the Sports Ticket and on Sports with Dusty. Okay, the Royals are in action tonight. The Royals are 7.5 games behind the Twins now, as they lost yesterday 5-4. Chris Bubich, the young left-hander, 3 1/3, 4 runs, 9 hits. Tough outing for him. Good teams come through when they have opportunities. The Royals don't. The Royals yesterday failed again with the bases loaded. Here's an amazing statistic. They're 2-for-21 at the plate with the bases loaded and struck out 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
That's not putting the ball in play.
Not at all.
In the bottom of the seventh yesterday, I knew what was coming. If anybody watching Royals baseball knew what was coming. So Gordon's at the plate and Gordon walks. Now the bases are loaded and Mondesi comes up to the plate. And I was like, he's going to be out on 3 pitches. Because one, he's messed up in the head at the plate right now. Mm-hmm. Alberto Mondesi, who's going to be a superstar, right? And in fairness to Mondesi, this has been a weird year. So I'm not going to really get too down on Mondesi. I know Royals fans already are, but this is a weird year. And I know everybody's dealing with it, but so, I mean, Hunter Dozier taking a while to get back in the flow too. I mean, we've seen some really good players really struggle at the plate so far this year because it's just different, all right? It is a different animal. And so I'm not overly worried about Mondesi. His defense is still solid. He may still figure it out and come around this year. The Royals aren't going anywhere anyway. So, and there are people like, well, don't we have a better option in that spot and pinch hit for Mondesi? Do you remember when Ned Yost had Aceytis Escobar and he was struggling? And you know what Ned said? He needs this experience because down the line, we're going to need him to do these things and he's going to be fine and blah, blah, blah. It's the same thing in Mondesi.
Yeah.
Matheny's doing the same thing. Just switch the guys out. It's the same situation, except I think Mondesi has more upside than Escobar did. And yesterday, he comes to the plate. Bases loaded. The Royals are down 4-3, two outs. Neum just put the ball in play. Puts the ball in play. Might be able to beat it out. Got great speed. And he swings at 3 pitches, two of which were well out of the strike zone. The pitcher, Romo, knew he would swing at stuff out of the zone. And Adalberto Mondesi this year, with runners in scoring position, he is 3-for-25 with 14 strikeouts. Now, that's really bad. That's a guy that's lost at the plate. And so I'm not giving up on him yet. But it is amazing how far he has fallen right now, and it's mostly between the ears. He had a good year last year. Injuries kind of derail him when he gets going. Many people across the league have said he's a superstar in the making. He's shown those flashes, kind of like Danny Duffy showing flashes of being a great left-handed pitcher, but never does really fully put it together consistently. Mondesi's much younger, so there's time. So I'm going to tell Royals fans, you're not going anywhere anyway. Even if you made the playoffs, you're not going very far. An expanded playoffs of 16. Now the Royals are 6 games out of the wild card, which you basically are halfway done through the season already.
Yes, yeah.
The Royals aren't going to playoffs. I didn't expect them to anyway. I said 23-37. It was the record I predicted. You said 18-42, which they're on pace to beat that.
Yeah.
They're on pace.
They weren't at the start.
No, they weren't.
I was like, 18 might be too high.
I know. Started 3-10.
They've actually, you know, well, when, you know, Keller comes back and doesn't allow a run in 17 2/3, that's obviously going to help out.
That helps, yeah. Well, and they won 6 out of 8 or 5 out of 6, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and every team goes through that, either a short season or a longer season. You're going to have a stretch where you play bad, and you're going to have a stretch where you play well and have a winning streak and a losing streak. That typically happens. But, you know, when you look at the Royals, I mean, right now they're on pace to win about 22, 23, 24 games. That's where they are right now, and they may get to that number. They may not. But they're not going anywhere. And so for Royals fans to freak out, like, who else are you going to put in there and hit for Mondesi?
I mean, it's
Brett Phillips, Bubba Starling. I mean, who are you going to put out there to hit for him? Salvi's on the injured list. Now, if the Royals were 17-11, it might be a different situation.
Yeah.
But you're 11-17. I mean, this is where you grow and you learn. And I think Mondesi will be fine. I think a few years from now, we're going to be looking back saying, hey, you know, remember that little blip in the road that he had to deal with? I still haven't lost faith in Adalbert Mondesi, but maybe he's lost faith in his plate discipline. He doesn't have any right now. He's lost at the plate, but, you know, Alex Gordon was lost for 2 years, and then last year was pretty decent, although Gordon's not exactly doing great this year either.
No.
But Salvi's on the injury list. That hurts your offense quite a bit, and it hurts you defensively too. Tonight, the Royals at the Cardinals. Cardinals now 9-8 on the season after not playing for what seemed like months. A 6:15 first pitch. Brad Keller, as you said, I was on the hill, the ace for the Royals. 3-0, hasn't given up a run. 17 2/3, scoreless. And he's on the hill against Jack Flaherty, who's a pretty good young pitcher for the Cardinals. Jorge Soler, been struggling at the plate. He had a 2-run double yesterday. It was good to see that out of him. A star safety cut loose by his NFL team. This Earl Thomas saga is interesting. It's like, is he taking the same stuff that Antonio Brown took? Because Earl Thomas used to be a pretty, like, everybody talked about a leader, great player. You know, Antonio Brown, yeah, he was a diva at times, but Antonio Brown was well-respected in the locker room, too. And it's almost like they just went off the deep end. And you really hope that when these guys pass away, we don't go back and find out they had a serious, horrible CTE, case of CTE. Because then we might look back and cut them some slack.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, we don't know that. And Earl Thomas, well, I can't get into particulars of how he got in trouble earlier this offseason, but let's just say it was X-rated.
Yes.
He's a Pro Bowl safety, and he got into a fight with a teammate, and he got kicked out of practice. And the Ravens are a Super Bowl contender. They're probably the biggest challenger to the Chiefs in the AFC. And Earl Thomas has been, in essence, kicked off the team. Done. They cut him. He's loose. He's gone. He can go with anybody else. He took the high road, Thomas said. Appreciate the Ravens organization opportunity. Had a great run, blah, blah, blah. Wasn't a very long run, but okay. And he's 31 years old. He signed a 4-year deal worth $55 million before last season. Now he is, in essence, a free agent. Well, I talked that the Cowboys would be the front runner. That's who was interested in him before when he was a free agent, before last season. You know who else was really interested in Earl Thomas? And I was actually okay with? The Chiefs.
Kansas City Chiefs.
In fact, the Chiefs had, in essence, a deal with Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas said last year, the Chiefs had already signed Tyrann Mathieu. And the Chiefs had a deal worked out with Earl Thomas. But towards the end, the Ravens gave him extra year, I believe it was. And they gave him an extra $5 million, and Thomas took it. You look back on that now. At the time, you're like, God, we could have Thomas and Mathieu. How great would this defense be? Now you look at it and say, Chiefs dodged a big bullet.
Got a Super Bowl, didn't have to deal with the
didn't
issues.
Didn't have to deal with it. Don't have the money on the hook with Thomas. You don't have to worry about some kind of challenge legally because the Ravens are going to try to nullify the $10 million it was set to make this year, obviously. You don't have to worry about that distraction now. And you also would have had more money tied up in two safeties to where you might not have been able to re-sign Chris Jones. I mean,
yeah.
or maybe Watkins wouldn't have come back. Who knows? You look at what the Chiefs have been able to do the last few years, and you look at the bullets they've dodged. Think about this for a second. If Kareem Hunt was a free agent or was up for a big contract, and I talk about that with Sermon Petro, and he says, I don't think they would have actually done that with Kareem Hunt. I'm like, yeah, if he kept putting up numbers, he was. There had been pressure publicly to do it, even though the Chiefs knew behind the scenes there were some red flags, even when he was drafted out of Toledo. But did the Chiefs, when we look back in hindsight, in retrospect, don't we have to sit here and say the Chiefs dodged a couple of huge bullets?
Oh, yeah.
That Hunt getting kicked off the team and what happened at that hotel or condominium, wherever he lived, that was a blessing disguise for the Chiefs. And not at the time, it didn't seem like it. But they ended up winning a Super Bowl, went to AFC title game two straight years. And now you sit here with Earl Thomas, who you really wish you could have got him and Matthew, how big that would have been. And now you have to sit here and say, wow, we dodged a bullet there. Now, we don't know if Earl Thomas would have acted like this if he was a Chief.
Yeah,
we don't know. We don't know. But the Chiefs would have been on the hook for a lot of money with Thomas, paying a lot of money to two safeties. Instead, they drafted a pretty talented safety in Juan Thornhill, who tore his ACL, but supposedly he's going to be back this year. That's a cheaper way to go, isn't it? And a younger player. Thomas is 31, and he's had some serious injuries, broken leg and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
So Earl Thomas' saga continues, and maybe he'll go to the Cowboys. The NFL has an issue with testing. Have you seen this story?
I've seen some things about it, yes. It's not good.
Not good at all. Saturday's daily COVID testing returned several positive tests from each of the clubs serviced by the same laboratory in New Jersey that handled these tests for COVID-19. They're working with their testing partner, BioReference, to investigate these results. While the clubs work to confirm or rule out the positive test, clubs are taking immediate precautionary measures as outlined in NFL and NFLPA's health and safety protocols to include contact tracing, isolation of individuals, and temporarily adjusting the schedule where appropriate. The other laboratories used for NFL testing have not had similar results. According to Brad Biggs of the Chicago Tribune, the Chicago Bears announced that they had 9 players test positive, found out later they were false positives. The Redskins and the Colts and even the Browns decided to shut things down just to be careful. The Buffalo Bills have had 6 false positives. Also, Detroit Lions have, along with the Chargers, have had staff member or players have false positive tests. That's a problem. That's a major problem, because if they're initially positive, you basically got to shut some stuff down.
Yeah.
But then you find out the false positive. Now it's like, wait a minute, let's start things up. Or can we? Is this, how many times we got to test it to make sure it's a false positive or a real positive?
And I read that they still, even if they've been told it's a false positive, they still have to have 2 negative tests
before to disprove
they can get
it
back in.
What a mess.
Yeah. And it's like, something's not good there.
Something's messed up there. The Jets had 10 false positives. The Vikings, 12. Bears, 9. They're going to have to get that sorted out very quickly. And by the way, Chiefs start the season. The NFL starts the season September 10th against the Texans. That's 16, 17 days away. So that's a lot of stuff to figure out here when it comes to this testing stuff. By the way, how big of an impact do you think it is without having preseason games? There have been a lot of talk about, we need to cut down preseason from 4 to 2, 4 to 3. We don't need 4 preseason games. I agree. I don't think they need 4 either. I do think 2 are helpful. And Steve Spagnuolo was talking about this last week, defensive coordinator of the Chiefs. He said, this is different this year because we're only going up against our own guys.
Yeah.
Now, I think it would help the Chiefs more so than most teams because the Chiefs defense is going up against one of the fastest teams in the league every day in practice. But the thing is, you don't get all the different looks you're going to get when you play the Texans. You can look at the film from last year, but I'm sure they're going to switch some things up. And likewise, the Texans don't get to see some stuff if they have a preseason game to get prepared for the Chiefs. Do you think there's certain teams that not having preseason hurts more than others? Like the Chiefs, you would think it wouldn't hurt them as much because they got most guys back. But they still got young players that need experience. You know, Willie Gay, the young linebacker, and others. You know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire would be helpful to have some preseason snaps, I would think. But there are other teams that have a lot of new faces or new coaches. I would say of all the years to not have preseason, the Chiefs probably benefit this year more than any other year. But what teams do you think would really be hurt by not having preseason? And I think every team's hurt by not having some kind of preseason. But the Chiefs seem to be one of the teams that is in better shape than others.
And I don't have all the numbers in front of me or whatever of who's who, roster size, rookies. But I would say the teams with a new coach –
and new quarterback.
And a new quarterback. You know, they need...
Yeah.
I mean, the Patriots probably wouldn't mind having preseason games. And if you have, like, a bunch of guys that you drafted that you feel like are going to you hope are going to contribute right away for you.
You want to see
them? You have four or five rookies that
you want to see them under fire.
Because you were so bad that you're going to have to play rookies mm-hmm. and younger guys, even second-year guys.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the teams that probably need the preseason more.
Mm-hmm.
I would say every team probably would benefit from at least one preseason game just mm-hmm. to get out there against somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing. But I think one thing that might hurt the teams as much as not playing their own preseason game would be what you were talking about. Like the Texans don't have a preseason game, so I can't look at their film
mm-hmm.
of what they've got this year, you know, what they put out this year onto the field. I mean, mm-hmm. yeah, we played them twice last year. You know what they've got, but they don't have DeAndre Hopkins anymore. You know, who's going to be their go-to guy? You need to look at all these things. I think that might hurt just as much as not actually getting on the field yourself, is not being able to see what the other team's going to do, too. But it helps you, too, from the other end. They can't see what you're doing either.
Right.
You know, but I think the Texans probably know what the Chiefs have and what they're going to bring to the table, even if they can't see Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the offense right now. They probably know who he is and what he brings to the table just by seeing, you know, what he's done, what he did at the college level and those things. But the Chiefs could be a disadvantage because they might be easier to plan for.
Yeah. But they're going to
have that many back. But they're obviously at an advantage because they do have that many back, and they don't, not a whole lot of guys have to come in here and learn everything and, you know, try to get ahead of the curve there. Of, you know, like Clyde Edwards-Helaire will, but most of those guys won't. They'll have to learn the offense. But the teams, I say, new coach, new quarterback, and a bunch of rookies that are trying to break the team, that are going to be important to the team,
mm-hmm.
those are the ones that need it more. But I think every team could use at least one to see where they're at.
What about the thoughts on conditioning and being in football physical shape for week one, like injuries? You haven't had now. Some players pretty much don't play much preseason anyway. But
yeah.
I think we're going to see more injuries. I may be wrong. I hope I'm wrong.
Saw
but I think we're going to see
a decent amount of injuries on the first day of pads.
Yeah, well,
this year.
The McCoy guy
yeah.
from he ruptured his quad or something. A very simple drill. You do wonder about how hard are the teams pushing their guys in practice because you don't want to hurt them, and at the same time you got to get them to a certain level because you don't have any preseason games.
Yeah.
That's why you have a scrimmage.
Well,
like high school, we just
yeah.
avoid. They had a scrimmage, but that's still not giving you a real barometer because they got young guys playing against other guys. You don't have ones versus ones. You got ones versus twos, whatever. And so same thing with the Chiefs. They got their second unit, mm-hmm. got their first unit. They got guys talented on the second unit that can make plays against the first unit, don't get me wrong, but it's not the same look.
Yeah.
That
was the injury thing. I was actually listening to Pat McAfee and A.J. Hawk talk about this the other day, and A.J. was like, man, that first day, you just got to get through it. You got to figure out mm-hmm. what can my body do right now. And there's like a wall that you got to get past
yeah.
on that first day of hitting with pads and,
yeah.
and full. And he's like, if you can't, there's some guys are, even if you've played in the league for so long,
mm-hmm.
once you get those pads, you're still timid about going up and hitting somebody.
Yeah.
And that's when injuries can happen sometimes. And that's what he was saying. And, you know, just listening to him talk about that, you know. And another thing that they haven't had is the OTAs.
Right.
You know, the non-mandatory mm-hmm. workouts that they do in the off season and rookie mini camp, none of that stuff happened.
Right.
And so you're now behind the eight ball on a lot of physical stuff. Even though I know you can learn virtually, put the system in place, but mm-hmm. if you're not going up against each other and getting those reps physically,
mm-hmm.
you're behind on that too. And I think it could cause some issues once they actually do get onto the field for real competition.
I agree with you. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out if we get to that point. 17 days away. Chiefs Texans, right, on our Citrus station, Z96.3 The Lake. Should be interesting. They had 2,000 fans at a little get-together there for the team at Arrowhead. Yep. You've seen the video. Everybody went in, took their mask off, didn't put them back on. Doesn't bode well, people. If you really, I'm telling you, I'm not, you know it, I know it. I mean, you and I aren't huge mask people, but we respect people that want to wear masks, and we will wear masks where we need to. So we're not opposed to wearing masks, but we're not, like, thumping our chest and getting mad and judging everybody if isn't wearing a mask. But I will say this. If you're one of those people that really wants sports, might be a good idea to wear a mask. Whether you want high school sports, junior high sports, if you want college sports, if you're going to go to K-State game, Oklahoma game, whatever, KU game. You go to Chiefs game with 22% capacity. If you want to go to more than one game, if you want to have a season, it would really behoove you to wear a mask. I'm not saying it's foolproof. I'm not saying I'm a gigantic supporter of masks. I'm not saying I'm really negative against it. I'm kind of in between, like, hey, you know, I'll wear one when I need to wear one. I also, if I don't have to wear one, I'm certainly not going to wear one. That's kind of how I feel about it. Not because I'm trying to be selfish. It's just that if I can practice social distancing, as I've been told, then I don't need to wear a mask. But obviously in these pictures that we're seeing of even little get-togethers, whether it be, you know, parties and gatherings for colleges, which, you know, that to me, whatever. But when we're talking about, you know, a concert with adults that aren't practice social distancing, not wearing masks, and then we see 2,000 people into the Chiefs Stadium and they're not enforcing anything, apparently, how are you going to have 17,000 people at Arrowhead Thursday night, September 10th? But this is exactly what we said. They're not going to enforce it. Then they can say wear a mask. You wear it when you walk in. As soon as you walk in, you take it off. They ain't going to do nothing to you.
No.
They're not going to do nothing to you.
Because I'm drinking this whole time.
That's exactly right.
I don't need to wear my mask.
Right. And they're not going to do anything to you. So it's going to be up to the people. It's not going to be about enforcement. It's going to be about up to people. Whether or not if you really, really want sports, you might have to, in order to get maybe more games, this is the way I look at it. I may be wrong. I have no idea. I can't predict the future. But I'm thinking that we have a better chance of having more games if we all are responsible. But if we're not responsible, I think your chances of your seasons being cut significantly are pretty high. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, for sure.
And it applies to the players, too. They got to be smart. And there's no bubble in the NFL.
And whether that's how it happens or not and how it got transmitted, people are going to blame it on you.
That's right.
And if things happen like that, they're going to be like, well, see, you should have been wearing your mask, even if that's not even how it happened.
Right.
But just listen, if you really want to do things, if you really want this back,
you're going to have
listen to the protocols that your team you're supporting are telling you to do. That's basically what it comes down to.
You might want to practice protocols they go through.
Yeah.
Honestly. I mean, you're not going to get all the testing they get, but I can just tell you this. I took my mom, Trigo County, where your parents and my parents live. They had a few cases, and it's tied to a wedding reception or wedding gathering, whatever, on August the 15th. And I've been told through the grapevine, I don't know for sure, I guess, but I don't have names, so I'm not hurting anything here, is that a particular person that went to that wedding or reception had and knew they had symptoms that were very similar to COVID and went anyway. See, I don't go nuts and crazy over the college students getting together having a party because that's what you do. And I think it's pretty unrealistic to expect all college kids to just, you know, hang out in their dorm by themselves. So, but I will say, whether you're 18 and going into college, or whether you're 14 going into high school, or whether you're you know, 32 or 44, whatever age you are, if you already are sick in this day and age with COVID-19 and you are sick and you're not feeling well and you still go to gatherings like this, I'm going to just say it as politely as I can. You're an idiot. You don't care about nobody. You're extremely selfish. It's one thing to get there with your friends. Everybody's feeling okay. Nobody's sick. Nobody's got any symptoms that they know of. And they're going to get together and they're going to live their lives. I'm cool with that. I really am. I'm cool with that. Is there a chance somebody doesn't know they have COVID? Sure. Absolutely.
There's a big chance of that because a lot of people don't get affected by
it.
That's
exactly.
Been proven. You know, whether you like all the numbers or not, it's been proven.
So what's the alternative? Hide in a bunker? That's not, you got to live your life. So I think there's a difference between people getting together that feel fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. But if there's one person that goes to that party that's feeling like total, you know what, and knows they've got symptoms of the flu or COVID and they still go, well, I have a problem with those people. And apparently that's what happened out in Trigo County from what I've been told. Whether or not that's completely accurate, I've heard it from a couple different people. Doesn't mean it's true, but it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah. Would it surprise anybody out there listening right now? I bet it's happened around here even. If you are sick or have a bad cough, especially in today's age that we're living in, maybe be a little smarter. It means you have no regard for anybody else. Now, when you hang out with people and they're all seeming fine and you feel fine, okay, you know, I see that as a different thing. But when you knowingly and you go around coughing, or you know you have a fever and you're still going to events like this, now you're just really, really selfish and you're putting other people at risk. You knowingly know you have it or you have something. Maybe it's not COVID. Even if it's the flu, that's not good to spread either. So, but if you don't have any symptoms and you're feeling great, that's a little bit different, don't you think?
Yes. It's very much different.
A lot different. NHL playoffs. The Bruins beat the Lightning 3-2, and they're up 1-0 in that best of seven. The Golden Knights, man, they just look good. Vegas rolls the Canucks. They stay 5-0. They're up 1-0 in that series. Islanders and Flyers, game one tonight of their series. And the Stars and Avalanche, the Stars up 1-0. Game two between Colorado and Dallas is tonight as the hockey playoffs continue to move forward. Did you see what happened in golf? We don't talk a lot about golf on this show, but holy shnikes. Dustin Johnson, who when he is on, he probably is the best player in the world. He was on this weekend at the Northern Trust Open. The dude shot 30 under. He shot a 254 over the four rounds of the tournament. He beat the second-place finisher by 11 strokes. That reminds me of Tiger back in the day when he won the PGA Championship by... Or was it the U.S. Open? He won one of those big majors by like 15 strokes, which was insane. Johnson's score was one off the all-time PGA Tour scoring record for four rounds of golf at a tournament. And he beat the second place placer by 11 strokes, beat third place by 12. He beat those in eighth place by 15. And the guy that finished last that made the cut and played all four, Patrick Rogers, he beat him by 37 strokes. That's just insane. You don't see that. Dustin Johnson talks about how he's playing the best golf maybe ever, you think?
Yeah, it was, you know, obviously all week I felt like I was striking it, you know, I was swinging the same, I was striking it the same, and I was, you know, I controlled my golf ball very well. So, yeah, it was a lot of, you know, what I was doing when I was playing really well in 17. I mean, I missed quite a few short putts, but other than that, no, I did everything pretty well.
Must be nice to just go out and beat everybody by 11 strokes at that level. How much fun is that? You just relax. I got this huge lead. I hit two out of bounds. Big deal. I'm up five.
Yeah.
Maybe six. How nice is that? You just don't see that.
No. Well, and especially since they've come back, like a lot of these tournaments have been like down to the last hole or playoffs.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, whoa, okay, well, this wasn't an exciting finish at all. He won by 11 strokes. Like, that's Dustin Johnson dominating, but everybody else is probably like, yeah, we'll try harder next weekend.
It's amazing when you see guys at a whole different level against the best in the world.
Yeah.
It just, you really need to appreciate that a lot more. I don't care if it's a major or not a major. Pretty impressive what Dustin Johnson did over the weekend. Enjoy the rest of your Monday, everyone. Remember, be respectful of others. If you're not feeling well, then maybe stay home. And, do the best that you can, and hopefully we can have the things that we so badly want, and that is to get to where we can attend sporting events again or make sure that we can go to school every day for an extended period of time. Let's all work together to make that happen.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.